Solomon said in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, beginning in verse 2, it's better to go to a house of mourning than to a house of feasting, because that is the end of every man, and the living takes it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for when a face is sad, a heart may be happy. The mind of the wise is in the house of mourning, while the mind of fools is in the house of pleasure. I think what Solomon is trying to express there is that it indeed is good for us sometimes to be confronted with our own mortality. And it forces us to give some thoughts to certain aspects, even the unpleasant aspects of life. Later on in the book of Ecclesiastes, in chapter 12, Solomon will have this very poetic description of the aging process and what it's like to get old. And he's encouraging us that we ought to serve God even from our youth, because there's going to come a time when we're not going to have the strength, we're not going to have the energy to do and accomplish the things that we could in our youth. But he concludes by saying in verse 7 that then, when death comes, the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. And that certainly is reminiscent of God's statement to Adam in Genesis chapter 3. When he is punishing Adam and cursing the ground from labor and hardship, by the sweat of your brow you will eat from it, right? He says you're going to labor all the days of your life, and then you will return to dust. For from dust you were made, and to dust you shall return. And that kind of emphasizes the fragility of our fleshly life. We're not made to live forever. We never were. We weren't designed to live eternally in this body. This body was going to wear out. It was going to grow old and decay. Peter, when he's quoting from Isaiah, says in 1 Peter chapter 1 in verse 24, all flesh is like grass, and all its glory like the flower of grass. Well, what do we know about grass and flowers? They're beautiful when they spring up and when they grow, but eventually the grass withers and the flower falls off. And so going to a funeral forces us to give some thought to our own mortality. Furthermore, going to a funeral forces us to give some thought to the brevity of our earthly life. James said in James chapter 4 and verse 14 that you don't know what your life will be like, that it's like a vapor that is here for a moment and then vanishes away. And I don't care how young or old someone is when they pass away, I'm always struck by that fact, that life is short, especially in the grand scheme of things. The amount of time that we have here is indeed brief. But what I'm also reminded of when I go to a funeral is that there's more to life than just this life. The Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 9 and in verse 27, inasmuch as it's appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment. We're all inevitably going to die one day, unless we happen to still be alive when the Lord returns. But after death, that's not the end. Something else is awaiting us. And the first step of that, I think, is judgment. We'll stand before our Creator, as Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10. We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. We're going to give an answer to God for how we've conducted ourselves in this life. And of course, as I reflect on that, if we're to be recompensed, that is paid back for our deeds that we've done in this life, what each and every single human being deserves is condemnation. Because there's not a one of us that has earned eternal life. And so to prepare for this inevitable judgment that's going to come, if we want to be able to stand before our Creator in the day of judgment, not trembling in fear, but in confidence and hope, we've got to do something about our situation. And the frustrating thing, the sad thing, at least from our perspective, is there's nothing that we can do to save ourselves. But thanks be to God that He sent His Son to die for our sins, to pay the price that we owe, so that He can extend grace to us and say on the day of judgment, yes, I know that Josh is a sinner, but I've covered his debt. And so then God can look at me and see, well, yes, he's a sinner, but maybe he had faith. And so I'll credit his faith as righteousness, just like he did with Abraham. And even though I am not righteous, because of God's grace and mercy, I can be counted as righteous before him in that day. Funerals force us to evaluate whether or not we're prepared for that. But I'll tell you, this is what I've been thinking about the last couple weeks. Thinking about not just going to a funeral, but going to my funeral. I want us each to give some thought to that this morning. I want you to try to think about what would it be like if you had the opportunity to go to your own funeral. To sit in the audience, to hear what's said, to see the reaction of people. What would that be like? Will the crowd be large or small? Sometimes I wonder if I will be missed by those that I leave behind, or will I simply be forgotten? I wonder what kind of an impact I'm really having on the lives of other people while I'm here. I guarantee I'm having an impact. The question is, am I having a good, positive impact that's worthy of being remembered? Or am I having a negative impact on the people around me? One that folks would soon be willing and ready to forget once I'm gone. I don't like doing funerals, but I guess it's one of those things when God gives you an ability, He expects you to use it. Sometimes it's tough to preach somebody's funeral because you don't really know the person. Maybe you've only met them just a few times, you don't have a great relationship with them, maybe you don't even know them at all. And yet the family calls upon you and asks, will you preach the funeral? What I do to prepare for that, especially if I don't know that individual myself, or I don't know them very well, is I like to try to gather the family together. And I just try to sit back with my notebook, and I try to keep my mouth shut, and I try to just listen to them talk about their loved one. And I take notes and I write things down. And anytime somebody shares a funny story, you know, I put that in there. And then I try to weave all of that stuff together into some sort of a eulogy for the deceased. In a way that will help us to remember their life and the impact that they had on those who they left behind. And I've done that numerous times over the years. And I don't know why, but when I was doing that here a couple weeks ago, I could not shake this thought. What will my wife and kids say about me when they're sitting there with some young preacher trying to express the impact that I had on their life? Will there be a bunch of good memories? That's almost like, I can't, there's no way I can capture all of this. There's no way I could talk about all of this in a 30-minute sermon. Where are my wife and kids going to be grasping at straws, trying to drum up any memories at all? Let alone some good ones. I think about, how well do I really know my family? How well does my family really know me? Trivial things. What's my favorite color? What's my favorite food or my favorite holiday? My favorite hobby or activity? What brings me, or in this case, brought me the most joy in life? What did I get excited about? And then I think to myself, do I even know the answers to those questions? About myself. If I don't even know that about myself, how's my family going to know that about me? You know, what I'd like for them to be able to say are things like this. Dad was funny. Dad enjoyed having a good time. His laugh was contagious. He could really get us all going. He was always there for me. He supported my pursuits and he helped me to be successful at whatever I tried my hand at. He always knew just what to say when I was down. He had a way of being able to lift my spirit. Dad taught me everything. He was always offering gentle and loving guidance in every pursuit. He was preparing me for my future so that I would know how to be a father, be a husband, be a leader, be self-sufficient. Dad was always my biggest ally. And I always knew that he was in my corner and that he had my back no matter what, even when I messed up. Even when I had done something that I shouldn't have, I knew that I could go to my dad and he would help me through it. He unconditionally and uncritically and patiently loved me. Whenever I had a problem or an issue with something, Dad was the first one that I wanted to call and ask for guidance or counsel or help. I could go to him and he'd always be there to help me. And there was never any doubt that he loved us. We always felt safe and secure with him and in his love. Maybe my wife, I might want her to say things like, he got me. He knew me. He built me up at every chance that he got. He was always doing those little things to let me know that he loved me. When I was around him, I wanted to be a better person. I'm going to miss our long talks and our time spent working together on projects and just being together. I'm going to miss my friend. My kids might say, I'm going to miss my mentor. I miss a partner. I miss my father. That's what I'd like for my family to be able to say about me as they sit around and think about the impact that I've had on their lives. But I'm afraid that that's not what they're going to say. What I'm afraid of, in all honesty, is that my kids and my wife are going to say things, they're going to have to say things if they're being honest, more like this. Dad loved us, but he was a hard man. He rarely smiled or laughed. He was always so serious about everything. He was hard to read. And he was hard to please. Oftentimes I felt like I was walking on eggshells around him, because I never was sure just how Dad would react, especially if I messed up, if I had done something wrong. I'm afraid that they'll say things like, "Dad was rarely around because he worked all the time. And even when he was around, he was never really present because he was distracted with other things in his mind." Yes, we always had food and we always had clothes. We always had the essentials. But what we never really had was Dad's undivided attention. We could have gone without all of that other stuff if Dad had been there. That would have meant more. He missed a lot of my events. I wasn't sure if he really even knew what I was up to or if he was interested in that kind of stuff. I don't even know if Dad knew what interested me, let alone if he even cared about it. I never felt that I really had that much in common with my dad or with my husband. We never really connected with each other in that way. And though he rarely handed out compliments, he was always quick to point out our flaws and correct every mistake that we made. He had a knack for knowing just what to say that would deflate me and make me feel little and small in his eyes. You might think I'm exaggerating in some of those things, but if I'm being honest about myself, that second list sounds a lot more like me than the first list. I know what I want to hear, what I would want to hear at my funeral. But I also recognize and know that I am not anywhere close to deserving that kind of praise. Not based on how I actually am right now standing before you today. And so I realize I've got a lot of work ahead of me. We've got a lot of work that I need to do. And it's times like these when you are forced to go to a funeral and think about this kind of stuff that it really sinks in and causes me to start thinking seriously about this type of stuff. What would your family say about you if you were suddenly, right now, today, taken away from them? I really want us to think about that. And think, am I being the kind of husband, the kind of father, the kind of wife, the kind of mother, the kind of sibling, the kind of daughter, the kind of son, that when my family has to talk about me and tell how I was in life, that it will be a good time for them to remember? Or will it be heartache? You know, something that I haven't mentioned thus far that I really do hope will be a part of my family's memories and discussions of me when I'm gone, as I hope they will say things like, "Dad wasn't perfect. My husband wasn't perfect. But he was a servant of God. He loved God and he put his faith and his confidence in the Lord. He knew that it was only because of God's grace that he stood a chance of being saved. Because he knew he was flawed. And he tried his best. But one thing that stood out to me was his unwavering commitment to God. He may not have always done what we would have liked for him to do or preferred to do as a family, but Dad always did what he believed God wanted. What he understood was to be right in the eyes of God. And this is what I really hope, especially my kids and my wife, will one day be able to say about me, is that through his example of how he lived, he taught me about true priorities. That spiritual things, that God's things come first. That number one, we love God, and then we love our family, and then we love others, and last, we put ourselves. That he helped me to have a faith of my own. And he showed me how to live my faith fearlessly every day, because that's how he lived his faith, fearlessly. Whatever God said to do, my dad did it. No matter how people looked at him, no matter what other people said about him, he was fearless in his faith. And because of that, this is not goodbye. This is just see you later, Dad. Because the type of man that my father was, imperfect he may have been, he was a servant of God who trusted in his grace and believed the promises of God and had a hope of the resurrection. And I am confident that I will see him again one day. And so though I miss him now, I know that I will get to see him again in the end, in the kingdom of heaven, standing around the throne of God together forever, praising our King. I think that that's the greatest gift that I could possibly leave. A godly example and a hope for the future. I want to leave behind me a lasting legacy with my wife and my kids. And Lord willing, maybe one day, grandkids, great-grandkids. I want to be the kind of godly, loving, patient leader that shows my family and all of my loved ones the way to make it home to heaven. And so, as I said before, I know I have quite a bit of work to do. Improvements to make, priorities to change or modify. And I think if we were all honest with ourselves, we would all recognize that that's true for each and every one of us. And what I want to leave us with today is that thought from James 4. Life is like a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Guys, we're not promised tomorrow. We don't have an Isaiah coming to us like King Hezekiah did in 2 Kings chapter 20 saying, set your house in order because you're going to die. You remember that story. Hezekiah prayed to the Lord. And the Lord granted him 15 more years. I don't know if that was a curse or a blessing, to be honest. To know when you're going to die? If I know I have 15 more years, I might put some stuff off for a while. The reality is none of us know how many more days we have. As we found out recently, even somebody you think is going to be around for a while, boom, all of a sudden they're gone.
Could be me. Could be you. We don't know. So don't squander the opportunity that God has given you. If you sit here this morning and you realize there are things that I need to make right in my relationship with my wife, my husband, my kids or my parents, my brother or my sister, there are changes that I need to make so that I can be a better person for them and have a better impact in their lives, leading them to heaven. I need to change priorities in my life, and I need to put first things first. You sit there and you think, my relationship with God is broken. I heard somebody recently say something like, one of the reasons why life is so precious is because we don't know when it's going to end. And he said, that's why every time I kiss my wife, I kiss her like it could be the last time. Every time I hug my kids, I hug them like it could be the last time. I don't leave the house without telling them how much I love them, because it could be the last time. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that approach with our earthly relationships. But I would suggest the same principle applies with our relationship with our Father. We should serve Him every day as though this might be our last opportunity to serve Him. We might honor Him every day because we don't know how many more we're going to have. That every day when I wake up, I make sure that I align myself with Him and His will. Because today may be my last. If I have sin in my life, I do my best to root it out and acknowledge that to Him and ask for His forgiveness. Because I don't know if I'll have another opportunity to do that. Don't think to yourself, I'll get to that down the road. We may not have down the road.
Don't squander your opportunities to make things right with others, but especially with your God.